So the average person now, under the system of capitalism, has a living standard which exceeds that of an 18th century monarch.
Increasingly, the average person in this country struggles to simultaneously feed their kids and turn the heating on, which I don't know whether that was a problem for an 18th century monarch or not, but I think
it's great.
How are you still a conservative, Andy?
Can I? No,
because your party is addicted to this theology.
Do we lack a robust economic theory and urgently need a new one? And I'm going to kick off with Abby.
Hi, hello there. Thank you for coming to this. Yes, our economic theory, our overwhelming sort of orthodoxy is completely broken. And no, we don't urgently need a new one, in the sense that the very last thing we should do is say the old science is dead, long live the new science. Because the idea of a universal science, good for all times and places, is utopian. And there's a really important difference between Keynesianism and monetarism. So Keynesianism was quite an empirical theory, and one of the things that stands Keynes apart from modern mainstream neoclassical economics is he takes uncertainty seriously. He believes we live in a radically uncertain world, and we can never escape that uncertainty. And so Keynesianism is about how can you pragmatically use fiscal and monetary policy to smooth out the booms and busts of the business cycle, of the economic cycle. The neoclassical economics that came in with Thatcherism and that has absolutely dominated economics in the global north, but also some, you know, a great extent the global south, neoclassical economics is very different. It's an attempt to build a universally sound science based on mathematical reasoning from axiomatic deduction. It's not the scientific method, so it's not based on observation from reality and then theorizing. It's based on logical reasoning from assumptions, axiomatic deduction, that is then played out in formal models. And the idea is that by using mathematical formalism, you would get away from the empirical noise of social reality and you would cut through to social reality. And it's basically borrowed from physics at the end of the 19th century. The idea was to build a social physics. And what the philosophy of science would say is this is a fundamentally flawed ambition. Because what the philosophy of science in the Kantian tradition would say, there's no Archimedean point where we can stand to read the world correctly. Theory is always built on the back of previous theories. We can't escape the history of our own curiosity. We don't have godlike omniscience. So science moves through different paradigms, which are then broken by counter-evidence, which are then reformed and re-established, and we move through different paradigms. Another reason it's a fatal conceit, particularly in the social world is always becoming something else because we have imagination. Because there's emerging complexity, there's novelty that comes with new technology. So even if by some miracle you chanced upon a correct universal theory, it's going to be wrong tomorrow because the way we react to it will be different. So we live with radical uncertainty. There's no Archimedean point where we can stand. The last thing we need is a universal theory of the economy.
Thank you, Abby. Nadim.
Thank you very much, Irene. Look, the premise of the question suggests that monetarism is a bad theory. If the pandemic has shown us anything, it's that we should have remembered the importance of its core teaching. And again, I'm going to quote Milton Friedman here, money's always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. And when you print money, the Bank of England had to pump £450 billion into our economy over the pandemic. And I was the vaccine minister, you remember, during that period. And I was going to the Treasury asking for more to be able to deliver the vaccine program, but also Bayes, the business department I was in before, was asking more to deliver furlough, to deliver that safety net for businesses, for people to be able to get 85% of their wages whilst we lock down. Now, in my view, that's the right thing to do. that the reason that governments exist, the reason the Bank of England exists, is to be able to smooth out the black swan events that we know happened, back to what Abby was saying about uncertainty. What does that do? Obviously, it then delivers high inflation. We got to about 11.1% inflation in our country. Therefore, there is consequences. And I think the part that certainly my government didn't do well enough was to explain the consequences. This was a sort of third world war against a virus. This was a bit like coming out of the Second World War. We never really stood up at those podiums and said, by the way, we're doing all of this, but there will be consequences. Someone has to pay for this somewhere afterwards. And I suspect that's part of the undoing of the Conservative administration that we've just witnessed. So having a basic understanding of economic concepts like these is important. We do have one very successful economic system, in my view, and I was born in Baghdad to a system that is based on national socialism, or extreme national socialism in the end with the Ba'ath Party, and therefore I hope you'll understand why I would make the argument and champion capitalism in our country. And we can talk more about this in a moment, where what is the role of the state vis-a-vis the wealth creators of this country. So the average person now, under the system of capitalism, has a living standard which exceeds that of an 18th century monarch. And therefore, hence why I say to you that capitalism is a force for good, my friends. But we currently aren't allowing it to function properly, in my view. So business people, entrepreneurs, very hard for them to maximize the benefits that they can give to society. Of course, there is the outliers, right? There are the minorities who want to abuse their position or their power. But on the whole, I think most people will set up a business, and the backbone of the economy is SMEs, not to be abusive of their employees or the system, but actually to do good. And it is often government which stands in their way and gets in their way to our society's betterment. We've also put an effective ban on building new homes and infrastructure. I don't think that's a good thing for society. But the problem is less that the overall economic theory, that we need to be much more practical, in my view, and get out of the way and listen to the wealth creators, to business. We need to spend less time arguing over an economic theory and more time making sure that the most provably successful, evidence-led strategy, economic system we have had is able to function properly. And more time listening to those small businesses, those people who have worked in the real world, rather than pontificating over theory.
Thank you, Nadine. Gary.
Do we have a good central economic theory? No. Do we need a new one? No. What we need is to understand what's happening economically. Increasingly, the average person in this country struggles to simultaneously feed their kids and turn the heating on. Which I don't know whether that was a problem for an 18th century monarch or not, but I think it's
a problem for us.
I think it's important. Okay, let's be clear about what's happening here, okay? I've got one economics degree from the LSE, one economics degree from Oxford. We never once mentioned distribution. I started work as an interest rates trader in 2008. Everybody predicted rates would go up in 2009. They were wrong. In 2010, they were wrong. In 2011, they were wrong. In 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, they were wrong. In 2020, everybody finally agreed interest rates and inflation would never go up again, and interest rates went to 7%, okay? it's very, very clear we're bad at this. It's very, very clear we are bad at this. Now, I want to put you in the position of a 21-year-old economics graduate from an elite university with very, very, very good grades, okay, from a poor background. This was me, right? I walk into my professor's office, he says, stay here, do a master's, you've got very good grades, okay? What are my options here? I stay in academia and then I can work in policy, I can work for government. I'd have to do a master's, a PhD, 3 or 4 years, postdoc. I'd have to work as an intern for like 3 or 4 years, making no money. Maybe 15 years down the line, I'll make some money. Or you can go into the city like I did, and I was a multimillionaire at 25, okay? Kids from poor backgrounds cannot afford to work in academia. They cannot afford to work in policy. I could not name you a single successful policy wonk, economics government minister, economist from a poor background. Every single year I was a professional trader, the most successful trader at the bank was from a working class background. This is what we've created. We've created a system which obviously takes all the good economists and said, we are going to fill your mouth with money if you shut the fuck up. You are not allowed the voice. You are not allowed the voice. And the maddest thing of it all is, when one kid leaves, and I was Citibank's most profitable trader in the year in 2011, you come out, you make excellent economic predictions in the media, on YouTube. If you don't believe it, watch my videos from 2020 where I predicted an explosion in inflation, an explosion in inequality, a collapse in living standards. The reason those predictions were good is because it's the same reason I've got a track record of making correct economic predictions for 15 years. Because I'm fucking good at this. And I could go, and I could get paid £2 million a year working for any investment bank in Canary Wharf in the city, and I cannot give that information to the government for free. If that is the economic system that you build, you cannot be surprised when all of the economists are wrong about everything. All of the good traders know inequality is destroying the economy, and they don't say anything because they get paid millions of pounds a year not to.
Thank you. So what I'd like to do is, we obviously have some different political opinions on the panel.
Clearly.
But for the first theme that we're going to address, I want to focus on the question of whether we have an economic theory which makes sense of the economy and whether we need to do something about the economic theory to some extent independent, if it's possible to be independent, of our political views. Because, as Gary identified, a very large percentage of economists got the recent behaviour of the economy, not only in Britain, but in the US, wrong. So what is the issue here? Have we got the wrong theory that we're operating with? Could we, in principle, get the right one? Abby.
Thank you. I think it's as... So neoclassical economics is really a methodology, right? It's a method of reasoning from assumption. So there's some room for manoeuvre within that, and I would, and lots of different theories come out of it, but all of those different theories are predicated on the idea that, as it were, the ideal type is a perfectly efficient system, like a it's a machine model of the economy. Most mainstream economics, the Treasury, consultancies, companies, spend their lives using what gets called second-best world economics, neoclassical economics, that says, okay, the idea of perfectly competitive markets, of perfectly informed individuals, perfect balance between supply and demand, that's utopian. But it's the right heuristic, it's the right benchmark for figuring out how markets fail. So most of economics, mainstream economics, is about saying, well, how do we solve monopoly? How do we mend asymmetries in contracting? How do we make markets where they don't exist? But the metaphysics of that isn't any more neutral than the utopian ideal, because they're all aiming to complete the circuits in a presumptively completable machine.
So are you saying that...
Sorry, just to finish that thought.
Yeah,
so we're confusing something that is valid in logic with something you can reproduce in the social world. And that's why after Thatcherite governments tried to implement the ideal, competition, deregulation, outsourcing, remaking the state according to making it imitate markets in a kind of theatre of markets, which is pretty much what state planning was about. It's trying to put state planning onto the table and rationalise it. So we end up with Soviet statecraft, because it's the only statecraft that makes sense in a world you think you can compute. So it's about quantification and output planning and target setting and forecasting. So we do all that. Thatcherite governments failed. New Labour came in a Khrushchevite kind of way and said, no, we can mend market failures. We'll get the best of markets and states. They spend a long time trying to mend market failures, and all the time, under the entire spectrum of neoclassical thought, We are decanting public money and authority and legitimacy away from anything that is public towards the private, towards financial markets, private sector actors, who then proceed to display none of the virtues predicted in theory, which is how we end up where we are.
I thought you were saying that we can't have an overall economic theory.
Yeah, we can't.
Okay, so I was so you think we can't have an overall economic theory, and we sort of practically should use lots of different strategies in order to make sense of where we are. Is what's going on that you're saying what's wrong that we that there's an attempt to impose a single overall economic theory, and that will never work?
Well, because we're using a machine model of the economy and then waiting for people and institutions and firms and financial markets to conform to the blueprint, to the machine model, and then being constantly surprised when that isn't possible. And what happens is you end up with dynamics that neoclassical economics can't even describe, let alone solve, which is where we are. What we need to get out of that is analytical pluralism. We need to step away from the idea there's one way of thinking about this. Mm. Think about the problems that we want to solve and then bring as many perspectives into the room to try and solve them, including those, most of all, who are at the sharp end of all the failures.
Okay. We need more economic pluralism, Nadim?
Analytical pluralism.
So, look, yes. Let me give you an analogy. So when I launched YouGov in 2000, mm-hmm. The industry then was led by Sir Bob Worcester, then Lord Worcester of Moray. And he had convinced the whole world that what polling was about was scientific measurement of human behavior. We came along, the internet begun, and we said, actually, that is a big lie. Right? No polling is based on scientific measurement. Right? We are all in the business of modeling. Right? And who can build the best model of human behavior should be the most successful pollster in the land. And I think the reason I say the analogy applies to economics is... whether I think it was Galbraith who said the only function of economic forecasting is to make astrology look acceptable. but that is the problem. You know, humans are too complex. And I think that's the point that Abby is making. So, a great example of that would be, it would be very difficult for any particular forecast to capture something that can have such an outsized impact on the economy, like the war on our continent, the Ukraine war. And I think we're in sort of violent agreement here on this. But what tends to happen with economists is there's this sort of pretense of knowledge, I think, that Hayek talks about, that we are in the business of, as economics, is in the scientific measurement. We're not in the business of scientific measurement, right? We are in the business of trying to predict how humans will behave. And that is tough and hard to do. But I do think there is a silver lining. So one of the things that I was talking to the team at YouGov the other day, I'm no longer involved, but I'm a huge fan of theirs, is for over a decade, we've been collecting terabytes of data from very large panels of human beings, millions of people, and we publish it as primary research or give it to the LSE or others to then do their work on. We've never been able to do what YouGov is calling connected data now. Now, supercomputing and AI, I think, will allow us to build much more sophisticated models, which I think hopefully will help in decision makers in government or the Bank of England to deliver better outcomes for people.
But what you were saying in the middle of that, it seemed pretty radical by comparison to the way that it's often presented. So we're saying as I understood it, that we don't have an economic theory that is reliable, that we can't really predict what's going to happen. And, of course, an enormous amount of public policy is based on exactly the reverse, that we are predicting what's going to happen. We all listen to, what the predictions are for inflation this year or GDP or whatever. They're repeated endlessly on the news. You're saying all of that, well, no, it's not just not the case.
But there is a difference between sort of pattern prediction and figuring out what's really going to happen in the economy, in terms of, say, an example would be supply and demand. And that is much more difficult. That doesn't mean we need to cancel institutions like the OBR. I think it's still worthy to be able to build models and for decision makers, you know, when I was in the Treasury, you know, I need information. I need to be able to look at that and then make a judgment, hold risk, right, and get comfortable holding risk. And you, the one thing you've got to get comfortable with is you will not get every decision right.
Gary, are you comfortable with a sort of consensus from different points of view here that we don't have an economic theory and in principle we can't have one that is accurate and precise? You comfortable with that?
I've spent a lot of my life having very rich people tell me it's impossible to predict the economy. I've done a pretty good job of it. I'm a multimillionaire now. I grew up very, very poor because I continually predict the economy right.
Do you think you have an overall economic theory that's driving that decision? Or is it your hunch of thinking, well, I just got a sense of what's going on and, you know, we can determine the future of the economy on that basis, on a sort of assessment?
Why do you think banks pay people like me £2 million a year?
I don't know. You tell
Because we've got a very good long-term track record of making correct predictions. Listen, economics is not a physical science. We can't do experiments. So how do we know who's good and who's bad? Well, the banks have got an idea that what you do is you look for people who consistently make correct predictions when other people don't. And they pay those people a ton of money. And listen, I want to tell you a quick story, okay? When I was just finished working in the city, I went back to university, I did a master at Oxford, 2017, 2019. We had a lesson on interest rates. I went up to the professor afterwards and I said, why do you think we've been so bad at predicting interest rates for so long? At that point, we'd incorrectly predicted interest rate rises 11 years in a row. He said, no, we always knew rates would stay zero, which is like categorically provably wrong. And I was shocked. And I said, no, like, we didn't. We kept saying they'd go up. And he was like, no, we knew. So I went back to my flat and I sent him the data. And he was like, oh, yeah, we did get it wrong 11 years in a row. These guys are so bad, they are unable to know that they're bad. Mm. This is literally the situation. And at the same time, you've got rooms full of people like me obsessing about what's going to happen. Obsessing about what's going to happen. And we try and work out how to predict things. And the way you predict things well is you understand them well.
Okay, Abby, so you just need good people using the theory and everything is going
to
be fine.
It's not just good people. You need to actually look at who has a good track record, because nobody looks at that in the public sphere, who has a good track record. And if you don't look at track record, how do people like me, who are genuinely good from poor backgrounds, bring ourselves up? Listen, I was the biggest trader at Citibank when I was 24 because I had a very good track record. And they look at people who have a good track record and bring them out. How do poor kids help the economy when they're good, when nobody cares if you're good or not? You have to check the homework.
Yeah.
So what struck me, read Gary's book, it's brilliant, and I'm going to use Gary's book here to try and make this point, which was financial markets, which operate with less and less engagement with the real economy, investing in the real economy. Britain's effectively in a private and in a public sector investment famine, even as we have, you know, one of the biggest financial markets in the world. One of the points Gary's making in the book is people didn't make money when they were right. Objectively, they made money as individual traders when other people were wrong, because it's betting, it's gambling in the main, in terms of what's going on. And then in the global financial crisis, let us not forget that, because we're still paying for it, when we assumed that markets would converge on a correct pricing of risk and categorically failed to do that, the public bailed them out. So financial markets have continued to make incredible amounts of money. Very brilliant people who are... I mean, what struck me about Gary's book is the point where you really make a ton of money, the point where you really make the best trade, is when you stop thinking about models and theory and you look outside your window and you say, inequality is now so extreme that it's sucking demand out of the economy. So you stopped thinking like a neoclassical economist in what you were trained in. You started thinking like a political economist, even a Marxist, dare I say. I'm not a Marxist, but Marx's predictions have been a hell of a lot more accurate about our economy than Milton Friedman's, in terms of, you know, driving inequality. And on that basis, you said interest rates are not going to go up, and you made millions of pounds because you were right. That was an empirical observation. It wasn't a theoretical model. And you were right. So what I would say is we need to go away from argument from axiomatic deduction and modelling and forecasting, because we live in an uncertain world, and we need to be more empirical. We need to go back to the scientific method, which is about observation of patterns, trying to make sense of those patterns, using different perspectives on how to find a way forward through that, remembering that we're always going to have to review the way we're thinking about it because the world is always turning into something else. Add the ecological crisis into that story, as we have to, and as neoclassical economics is completely myopic because it assumes that if we price nature, it'll be fine. Machine modelling for an open system world in an ecological collapse. We need to wake up to where we really are. The economy is a wholly owned subsidiary of nature. There's a bit of realism for you. And we should recalibrate and rethink about what our priorities are. And they ought to be resilience and adaptability and regenerating human thriving nature. And for this, we're going to need a lot of problem solving, a lot of pragmatism, a lot of conversion methodologies for the way we do things so that we can change our priorities without collapsing the economy as we do it. But we ought to become very real. And the least real we have ever been in this country in the modern era is the last 45 years of neoclassical economics.
Okay. So, less economic theory, more practical engagement with stuff?
Bring it on. It's a great
How
thing.
Are you still a conservative, Nadim?
Why?
Can I?
No,
because... Because your because party is addicted to this theology, right?
I would say to you, post-pandemic, and my experience of what we had to do to deliver the vaccine, is to work collectively. And if someone can show me a better mousetrap, a better model, then...
I can.
Great. Well, we should talk.
We should.
Okay.
Leave the conservative party.
Let's, at that point, move on to our next theme. Having a surprising level of...
To continue watching this video... Click the link in the top left or in the description below.
With a free trial, you can enjoy the full talk and thousands more.
Thank you for being part of the conversation.